Good morning, and welcome to the press briefing on the West Coast Clean Transit Corridor Initiative. When we get to the question and answer session, if you have a question, press star one on your phone. Today's call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Paul Griffo of Southern California Edison Corporate Communications. Paul, you may begin your conference.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to members of the media who are on the call. This morning's news conference is to announce the results of the West Coast Clean Transit Corridor Initiative. This is a study exploring the possibility of electric vehicle charging for freight haulers and delivery trucks along Interstate 5 and adjoining highways. The study was commissioned by 9 electric utilities and 2 agencies representing more than 24 municipal utilities, all represented on the call today. I'll start off by introducing the members of our panel. We have Katie Sloan, the Director of E-Mobility and Building Electrification for Southern California Edison. Bill Boyce, the Manager of Electric Transportation and Distributed Energy Strategy for Sacramento Municipal Utility District. And we have Eva DeCesaro, Senior Product Manager for Transportation and Electrification with Pacific Power. And then with Puget Sound Energy, we've got Will Einstein, the Director of New Product Development. And also on the call to take questions after the panel gives their remarks, we have representatives from the other utilities who are sponsoring this study, LADWP, Northern California Power Agency, PG&E, Portland General Electric, Seattle City Light, San Diego Gas and Electric, and Southern California Public Power Authority. So with that, I will turn it over to Katie Sloan of Southern California Edison. Katie?
Thanks, Paul. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. Last year, we announced the beginning of the West Coast Clean Transit Corridor Initiative, a study commissioned by the utilities and agencies represented on the call this morning. Today, we are releasing the results of that study, which we feel could lead to significant reduction of harmful emissions from freight transportation that disproportionately affect our most vulnerable communities, in addition to improving our air quality and ultimately creating jobs in an economy that's been hit hard by the novel coronavirus. The results of this study provide a literal roadmap for utilities in Washington, Oregon, and California that will help electrify transportation in a coordinated fashion. Here are the specifics. The study recommends adding electric vehicle charging for freight haulers and delivery trucks at regular intervals along Interstate 5 and adjoining highways. The first phase of implementation would involve installing 27 charging sites along I-5 at 50-mile intervals for medium-duty electric vehicles, such as delivery vans, by 2025. Later, 14 of the 27 charging sites would be expanded to also accommodate charging for electric big rigs by 2030. An additional 41 sites on highways that connect to I-5 are being proposed for electrification in a similar phased strategy. Those highways include Interstates 8, 10, 80, 210, and 710, and State Routes 60 and 95 in California, I-84 in Oregon, and I-90 in Washington. This study comes at a time when we believe major investment in electric vehicle charging infrastructure will help significantly with a just and equitable economic recovery from COVID-19 in our state. But the study itself is only a start. Carrying out its recommendations will require a firm commitment by all 3 states to make significant investment in transportation electrification infrastructure. This can be accomplished by accelerating existing plans for investment, as well as funding new programs. One such program is Charger-D Transport, which Southern California Edison recently launched to help pay for the cost of installing charging infrastructure for 8,500 medium and heavy-duty vehicles in our service area by 2024. Investing in EV charging will keep workers on the job and create new jobs at a time when unemployment is soaring, and will help facilitate a smoother transition to electric transportation, especially in the commercial sector. Starting now could provide immediate economic stimulus and set the foundation for future economic development and creating more resilient communities. We estimate that it would take more than a decade to fully deploy this many public high-powered charging stations, providing a long-term source of stable jobs that would help contribute to lasting economic recovery. The electrification of medium and heavy-duty vehicles is particularly important here in the Los Angeles region, as 40% of all of the goods that enter the U.S. travel through the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. As vital as the goods movement industry is to our economy, it creates, in aggregate, the largest source of air pollution in the region. Southern California Edison's Pathway 2045, our company's analysis of the steps our state must take to meet its 2045 goals to clean our electricity and reach carbon neutrality, calls for 75% of vehicles on our highways to be electric within the next 25 years. We're talking about 26 million cars, 900,000 medium-duty, and 170,000 heavy-duty vehicles across California by 2045. If successful, we will also improve air quality and protect public health, given that studies have shown breathing polluted air makes individuals more susceptible to significant health risks, including COVID-19. And these health benefits will only improve as utilities do their part to increase the supply of renewable energy that will make the use of electric vehicles increasingly clean as time goes by. And now I would like to turn it over to Bill Boyce, Manager of Electric Transportation for the Sacramento Municipal Utility District. Bill?
Thank you, Katie. Sacramento Municipal Utility District, very happy to support this study. We are pleased because it's very important for us in Northern California. Sacramento really sits at the junction of I-5, I-80, and Highway 99. Which puts us really at the nexus of all the goods movement transportation in the northern end of the state. We have been a historical transportation center going back to the 1800s when Sacramento was the West Coast terminus of the Transcontinental Railroad. For SMUD, Sacramento Municipal Utility District, we've been supporting electric transportation since 1990 when it first got going with small light-duty passenger vehicles. And we're very happy to see that the technology now has progressed until it's now starting to be used for these medium, heavy-duty, all the way up to the big Class 8 trucks. It's really an accomplishment to see how the technology has improved over the years. At SMUD, we first started supporting the big Class 8 trucks with kind of related transportation projects going all the way back to 2004. When we started promoting use of electricity for idle reduction, where trucks could turn off their engines when parked and plug into electricity to run all the loads in the truck cab so they could sleep overnight and still have electricity. We believe that reducing emissions from the transportation sector is important for improving the air quality in our region. Transportation-related emission sources make up about 80% of the criteria pollutants for ozone and health-related pollutants. But also in California, transportation sector is the largest greenhouse gas emission sector with approximately 40% of the emissions in California. So having healthy lungs even more important in this time with the threat of COVID. Other things we're doing support this. SMUD recently made commitments to start California Mobility Center in Sacramento. It's a public-private acceleration hub that will be working on technologies. Many of those will be targeted at medium and heavy-duty transportation solutions. The California Mobility Center really provides a state-of-the-art hardware and software prototype facility in Sacramento, working with companies to advance these technologies, once again, to help improve the environment and also provide economic and workforce opportunities. And with that, I'd like to introduce the next speaker with Eva DeCesaro from Pacific Power.
Thank you, Bill. My name is Eva DeCesaro. I'm the Senior Product Manager for Electric Transportation at Pacific Power. We're very fortunate to have great alignment in the West around discussing and planning for our shared energy future. Pacific Power and the other study sponsors are looking beyond our local service areas and working together towards regional solutions that will meet the changing and diverse needs of the communities we serve. Pacific Power brings unique perspective to this study as the only electric utility that serves primarily rural customers in all three West Coast states. On today's call, I'll be highlighting Oregon. Similar to California, according to the Oregon Department of Transportation, transportation is the largest source of emissions in the state. Removing a major source of carbon emissions from interstates will have a positive impact on the environment and the health of communities along the I-5 corridor, particularly in communities that are disproportionately affected by pollution. The West Coast Clean Transit Corridor Initiative is our first step in tackling a major challenge, preparing for the transition from medium and heavy-duty fossil fuel transportation to electric transportation on a major scale. We believe in the power of partnerships to drive substantial change, achieve growth potential, and strengthen community vitality, and we see that shared commitment in the spirit of this study. The findings and recommendations from the West Coast Clean Transit Corridor initiatives along Interstate 5 can be applied to other regions and routes across the West Coast states and across the nation. This initiative and roadmap will help us navigate the audacious journey towards significant changes around electric transportation and will have lasting positive impact for generations to come. This study and its intended goals align with many of the transportation electrification initiatives happening in Oregon. Pacific Power, alongside Portland General Electric, are currently supporting programs to help communities achieve their electric transportation and energy sustainability goals and drive an economic growth in Oregon. We have active programs for customers to promote awareness of the benefits of electric transportation, help fund the development of new electric vehicle charging stations of all classes, and to build publicly accessible fast charging stations in locations that can support rural electrification and allow drivers to access some of the most beautiful parts of the state. Over the past year, our grant funding program supported dozens of communities from Coos Bay and Bend to Portland and Medford to develop new workplace and public charging stations in their communities with over $1.5 million in grant funding already awarded. The next step is to build off the recommendations of the West Coast Clean Transit Corridor Initiative and support medium and heavy-duty electrification in these communities. Power electric vehicles of all classes through Pacific Corp. Pacific Power is taking part in a $1.3 billion investment that includes upgrading existing wind fleet for enhanced efficiency and output, adding 1,150 megawatts of new wind resources, and building a new 140-mile transmission line to bring that wind to where it is needed most. These projects are how we're working to connect more renewable resources to our customers and power the future of electric transportation. To close, we're excited to announce that as of yesterday, our transportation electrification plan was approved by the Oregon Public Utilities Commission. This plan, alongside Portland General Electric's transportation electrification plan, will help us achieve Oregon's goals of increasing the number of electric cars, trucks, and buses on the road. These plans are our applied approach to ensuring Oregonians have access to clean vehicle charging infrastructure. While collaborating with utility partners on the West Coast Clean Transit Corridor Initiative will help us broaden that access even more into medium and heavy duty over the coming years. Now, to get the Washington perspective from Will Einstein at Puget Sound Energy. Will?
Thank you for the opportunity to participate in this call. I'm pleased to represent Puget Sound Energy and the other utilities in Washington State that helped sponsor this study. Like the other states that are part of this initiative, implementing the recommendations from this study and building a new network of charging facilities for medium and heavy duty trucks will be a critical part of addressing climate change and reducing air emissions in Washington. Washington has set aggressive goals for reducing greenhouse gas emissions and generating more renewable energy from its utility sector. But the transportation sector is also changing rapidly. Buses, ferries, freight trucks, fleets, and personal vehicles are shifting to electricity for power rather than relying on gasoline and diesel fuel. Washington has seen extensive growth of passenger electric vehicles, as well as increasing commitments from commercial customers looking to convert medium and heavy-duty truck fleets. These commitments are coming from government agencies, and companies like King County Metro is committed to a zero-emissions bus fleet by 2040, and Amazon plans to electrify its heavy-duty and delivery fleets. As Katie mentioned, implementation of this study will drive investment in electric vehicle charging infrastructure and help spur our economic recovery and create new green jobs throughout our region. Our plans are really driven by our customers' choice. Washington Utilities are working closely with our customers as they make decisions to electrify transportation. These collaborative relationships have become essential in planning for an electrified future. By increasing access to transportation, we will accelerate the deployment of EVs by fleet operators as they become more confident in the and have greater access to dependable charging along their routes. Creating strong partnerships between utilities, electric truck manufacturers, charging equipment providers, fleets, and state agencies will be important to driving growth and adoption of these new trucks. But it's also important to improve the health outcomes for our communities. We see this as a critical part of this effort, and we believe that in emphasizing equity in our planning for this infrastructure to help reverse the impacts of transportation emissions and the adverse impacts they place on communities of color and low and moderate income households. Data shows that people live near truck traffic corridors experience higher rates of asthma, lung, and heart disease due largely to breathing toxic vehicle emissions. Electric trucking provides part of the solution with benefits like cleaner air and reduced greenhouse gas emissions in those communities and across our state. To put this plan into action will require statewide collaboration and a phased approach across all of these efforts. It will require significant investment, greater incentives, and strong coordination of policies and regulations. We look forward to working with our partners in Washington, Oregon, and California to build a strong West Coast charging network and to drive adoption of electric trucks by fleet operators. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. That concludes the panel remarks, and I would like to open it up for questions. I will let you know, though, that also on the line, besides our speakers panel from Southern California Edison, from SMUD, Pacific Power, and PSE, we also have on the line from Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, Nancy Sutley, who's the Senior Assistant General Manager of External Regulatory and Regulatory Affairs, and she's also the Chief Sustainability Officer for LADWP. From Northern California Power Agency, we have Emily LeMay, who's the Customer Programs Manager. And PG&E, we have David Sawaya, Senior Manager, Decarbonization Strategies. From Portland General Electric, we have Aaron Milano, the Product Portfolio Manager for transportation electrification. From Seattle City Light, Emeka Enyawu, who's the business unit officer and energy and innovation resources for Seattle City Light, and also I believe David Logston, the director of electrification and strategic technologies, also on the line. And from San Diego Gas and Electric, we have Brittany Seitz, who's the Clean Transportation Director. And from SCAPA, Michael Webster is the Executive Director. So with that, I will open it up for questions. And if you, operator, if you want to give instructions for asking questions again.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch tone phone. And you may press star 2 to withdraw that request. Again, please press star 1 and record your name. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question or comment comes from Rob Nicoleski from San Diego Union Tribune. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks, folks. I have a whole bunch of questions. You can tell me if I'm running on too long. But the first question, Katie, you can answer this, or anyone who's on the call can answer it. The big question is, I listened to what you guys said. I looked at the executive summary. I did not see a dollar figure. If you guys get what you're asking for, all these 50-mile interval charging stations up and down I-5 and on the adjoining highways in all three states, how much is all that going to cost?
Hi, Rob. Yes, this is Katie Sloan at Southern California Edison. I'm happy to take that one. So first, a little context. The estimates for charging sites costs developed in this report are intended to provide a high-level overview of the different elements that can affect the deployment of this infrastructure. And again, we're talking about long-term transportation electrification needs for moving freight on the West Coast from 2025 through 2030. Keep in mind that vehicles are still in development, and this will take time to plan and build out, which is why we're doing this study now. Additionally, many components can significantly affect these costs: permit, distance from electric utility interconnection, capacity of the grid, charging station, site design, and construction needs are some of the critical components. So overall, for all of the sites identified across the three states, for all of the utilities, all customers, and all of the highways, not just I-5s, but also including the corridors, by 2030, we're looking at about $850 million total.
Okay. Now, who would pay that? Would that be utility ratepayers? Would that be taxpayers paying through gas taxes? Or would, you know, the federal government pick up some of the bill? Who pays?
Hi, yes, this is Katie Sloan from Southern California Edison again. So good question on who pays. So utilities overall have a duty to serve and will provide the necessary infrastructure to supply the sites with power from the grid. But we do expect that there will be substantial investments needed on the customer side of the meter as well. The utility does have a role to play in supporting customer side infrastructure, but it's also essential to create robust, dependable, and long-term funding programs to support both infrastructure and truck technology. So as the study highlights, we would expect a partnership with governments and industry stakeholders to help create this robust, dependable, long-term funding, which will come from both state, federal, local governments, in addition to customers and utilities. So it would be an all-in approach.
I see. Now, is the general idea
Hang on, Rob. This is Paul Griffo from Southern California Edison. Mm-hmm. But I'll give you one more follow-up, then we've got people stacked up. But if you want a follow-up interview with Katie or else anybody else in any of the other utilities, on westcoastcleantransit.com, we have media contact information, and you can contact one of us, and we'll set you up with an interview, a follow-up interview, where you can go more in depth, if you like.
Okay.
How's that?
All right. So then my last follow-up would be, this is for Katie or whoever, is the idea behind this initiative that if you put in the charging stations, the trucks will follow, or is the idea the reverse, that the trucks are going to be there in the next few years, and therefore we should put in the charging stations?
This is Katie at Southern California Edison. I will take that. In talking to fleet customers and fleet operators, we understand that in order to accelerate the deployment of EV electric vehicles for trucks, they would like to see these public sites that are open in order to support their operations along the highways. That said, as you can see in the study and the market information, the trucks are coming and customers are starting to adopt them.
Hello?
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from
Hello?
David Ferris from ENE News. Your line is open.
Hey there, all. Thanks a lot for making the time for the call today. I have a question about how this compares to the utility role in electrification for passenger cars. Obviously the utilities had a role in developing that infrastructure, and I wanted to see if you could tell me how this differs from the role the utilities played with passenger cars, and what lessons you learned from passenger cars that you're applying to this to do it differently.
Hello?
Yeah, this is Bill Boyce from SMUD. I think the real difference of what we have to do to support the big larger trucks is really at these sites we've identified is electrical service that goes into charging the trucks is a lot larger than what we have had to support with regards to light duty. And it's really more about getting large electrical service upgrades in place to support, if you can think about it, a truck charging plaza that would need to have fast charging for upwards of 10 trucks charging at one time takes a lot of energy. So the major difference that we have here is really the overall size and scale. And the lessons learned that we are applying from the light duty side is really about pre-planning and timing. To build stations that are going to be serving this level of electric load, you need more time. That's really coming out to bear in regards to public DC fast charging that we see on the light duty side. And so really, in the purpose of the study is really to identify what we need now and get ahead of the curve so we can start the electric planning and get that in place to really support the major electrification that these will take. And, you know, and also the fact that, you know, it really takes interstate coordination. You know, when you look at things that you do with regards to goods movement of getting goods all the way from San Diego to Seattle, you really need to have planning all up and down the corridor to support that. And trying to coordinate that is something that wasn't done at the very beginning of the light duty. Oregon and Washington did some of that early on, but really getting a plan so that there's overlapping stations to support the range of the vehicle so you can truly move goods from north to south or across the state on some of the other corridors. So we are applying, like I said, really applying the need for the interstate coordination, really applying the lessons learned for getting ahead of things and really looking at the large planning for this type of electric load.
Just one follow-up question there. This is obviously only a first step, but there's going to be a lot of electric trucking. Do you guys see the utilities playing a larger role in heavy-duty electric charging than you have in light-duty?
I think each jurisdiction and each state, has kind of different ways that they're approaching it with regards to the regulatory bodies. And I think a lot of that will be determined kind of at the state level. But just in general, like I mentioned, the larger electric loads involved in these big trucks will demand a lot more, activity on the utility side. Some of these sites, if you read the study, vary from anywhere of 3.5 megawatts up to 23.5 megawatts, and that really takes a lot more utility side work and planning. So that role to support this needs to be elevated in the utilities to support this. So it is significantly more utility work to support these larger loads and transportation hubs.
Thanks. All
right, thanks, Bill. Thank you. And our next question comes from Bengt Halverson from Green Car Report. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks all for holding this call. I'm wondering, this is a good follow-up based on the previous question, what you can tell us about the specifications of this charging infrastructure itself as the trucks will encounter them and how you expect those charging needs at the connector to evolve over time. What can you say about the power needed at each connector over, the years that these charge points will be in service? And then what are you expecting in dispensed energy? How are you expecting that to vary over time? I'm wondering, because this study sounds much more extensive than what was done for the original West Coast Electric Highway for passenger vehicles. At that time, it was it seemed like mostly a guess based on the LEAF and analysts' predictions of what would be out there. What were some of the sources what would be some of the sources for making this future proof?
Yeah, this is Eric Salo from SCE. I was a project managing on this study, and I can answer some of those questions. You had a lot of pieces in there, and so I'll start with some of the numbers and then talk about some of the other methodology that went into that. So the study looked at two timeframes, 2025 and 2030, and that was really based upon the needs of the different technologies that will be coming into the market. 2025 really focused on medium-duty trucks that would be traveling along the corridor, while 2030 was really focused on the heavy-duty trucks that would be going along the corridor. And the site designs responded to those different technology needs. So in the 2025 or the medium-duty context, the site looked at the potential battery sizes of vehicles that have been announced and the distances that they would be traveling, and then the charging times that would be expected in comparison with a diesel vehicle. And so the study suggested a 350 kilowatt charger or port for each one of the ports installed. And as Bill mentioned, the study looks at having an average of 10 of those per site. Now, these hypothetical sites kind of ranged in have ranges as they could be installed, but for simplicity's sake, since we're looking at such a broad scope, we're looking at 10 ports per site at 350 kW per charger. Now, when you go to the longer time frame and the heavy-duty trucks, the needs increase pretty dramatically. And so there hasn't been a standard established for heavy-duty or really high-speed truck charging, and those that work right now kind of ranges between the 1 megawatt and 5 megawatt per port range. And so based upon the mileage distances and some of the battery sizes in the trucks, the study selected a 2 megawatt charger or port as an example, and then would be placing about 10 of those at each one of the heavy duty sites in conjunction with those medium duties. And that's how you get to, you know, those larger sites being 23.5. Megawatts, you know, peak capacity. With regards to your question about, you know, future-proofing or scaling, this study is really a great first kind of stab at a holistic approach to what this looks like and the build-out. And so the future-proofing is going to really have to evolve with regards to how the technology advances, and there's still very nascent vehicle technology right now. And so we looked at surveys from OEM manufacturers as well as charging station manufacturers to get an idea of what's coming in the near term. But as for that really long-term context, these sites will have to be built to adapt to that. And whether you're increasing the number of ports, you're increasing the type of or the speed of the charger, that can all be adapted and built off of this initial hypothetical site, if you will.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from Rod Walton from Power Engineering. Your line is open.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for doing this. It's fascinating. One question I had, when I'm looking at you guys talking about the cost, I was just curious about the private part of this. I know you've talked about the utilities, but you know, when you're talking about big charging stations that I assume maybe double as, you know, convenience stores or what have you, like they do, you know, currently, has there been any talk with the private sector? Are there vendors? I'm thinking of, you know, like Phillips 66 or those kind of things. Are those in the works, or has there been any dialogue with the private sector in terms of, you know, buying in and contributing part of this cost? Hello?
I'm happy to take that again. This is Eric Salo. In the study, we went out and surveyed several truck stop operators, as well as some of those site locations to look at what they're doing now and how they're thinking about plans changing in the future or adaptations. And there's going to have to be partnerships with those sites. I think that's going to be really essential. One of the pieces of this study that we looked at with regards to location and siting was how does this line up with the size and distance spacing between existing diesel fueling stations right now. And so the study really doesn't directly say that these providers will be the ones installing those charging ports in these new sites. But it alludes to the fact that, this is where trucks are already going. This is where infrastructure and space kind of already exists for current fueling. And so it's a very simple and easy, straightforward transition to use those as the benchmark. And so partnerships with those sites will be absolutely necessary, I think, going forward, especially in the long term. But we don't have any discussion or explicit thoughts on where cost sharing may sit with regards to those site providers versus public funds versus utility funds and that kind of breakdown. But really looking at it, it's going to require this holistic approach.
Can you just sort of characterize it as you've got some enthusiasm from that end when they look at their market and they know the trucking market probably as well as anybody that this electrification is definitely a positive move forward?
It's a little mixed, to be honest. I think that the enthusiasm is around they are providing a service for fueling, and whether that's electric fuel or liquid fuel, they'd be interested in providing that service. However, there is uncertainty and challenges around the shifting dynamic of, what is this going to mean? Are electric trucks actually, coming onto the roads and that type of uncertainty? But definitely from a standpoint of providing service to people or to truckers visiting their stations, that enthusiasm is there.
Very good. Thank you.
Hey, Eric, since you are not on the agenda anywhere and not in the press materials, could you give them your name and spelling and your title?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Eric Salo, E-R-I-C, and then S as in Sam, E-I-L-O, and I'm a senior manager of e-mobility strategy at SCE.
Thank you. And as a reminder at this time, if you have a question or a comment from the phones, please press star 1, make sure your phone is unmuted, and record your name. To withdraw that request, you may press star 2. Our next question or comment comes from Garrett Herring from S&P Global. Your line is open.
Hello. Hey, thanks for having this call. I'm curious about the level of coordination you've had so far or plan to have with grid operators in the West to ensure that these stations are fueled with renewables. There's a lot of excess renewables, obviously, in the middle of the day with all the solar that's produced, especially in California. And I know there's concerns around electric vehicle charging that happens during the afternoon peak, when the system is largely reliant on fossil fuels.
Hi, this is Katie Sloan at Southern California Edison. I can address this one. First, I would say that electric vehicle charging overall can be very helpful in using renewable energy that is produced during the day. For Southern California Edison, we're looking to be at 80% clean energy by 2045, and we believe that cleaning the grid will help us to use that clean energy for the electric vehicles. the all of the different states and utilities that are part of this study have various clean energy and renewable goals, and will be working on working on their pathways to make their grids greener. I'd also say that a really important piece of this is the planning piece that we've started to talk about. Having this roadmap today will help us be able to put that infrastructure in for the grid ahead of time. As Bill mentioned, some of the larger stations that we're looking at can take 3 to 5 years to build. And the overall study found that for most of the utilities across California, Oregon, and Washington, we have enough capacity in our urban areas along I-5 to support the interconnections for medium-duty charging sites. But in rural areas, there will be more of a challenge, and no area has the capacity right now to serve the heavy-duty site development. But the good news is that by having this little roadmap, we can start to identify the locations where we would want to build the grid out in order to support electrification along the I-5.
Okay, so please go ahead.
I was just going to say, Katie, this is Will Einstein from Puget Sound Energy. I just wanted to add to that that I think it's the timing of the study is really helpful because it dovetails well, particularly in Washington, with our, as I mentioned earlier, our efforts to increase the amount of renewable energy in our grid. You know, specifically, our state has set a requirement that we will have coal out of our power supply by 2025, and we will be 80-plus percent renewable and carbon neutral by 2030. And so as you look forward over this time frame, it's going to enable us to plan. As was mentioned, these stations are going to take multiple years in order to develop. So as we make the progression towards the development of these stations, we're going to also be in the process of adding renewable energy to the grid and removing fossil fuels from the energy supply. And so that will help drive towards the statements you made of using renewable energy to power electric vehicles.
Gotcha. So, do you see these vehicles charging all during the, high renewable energy production periods of the day? Or, is there a possibility that a lot of these vehicles could, in fact, be charging during the peak and exacerbating peak?
So this is Katie Sloan, Southern California Edison. I'll start and definitely welcome others to chime in. In this specific study, we didn't get into specific load shapes of when vehicles are charging. That said, for most vehicles and in most locations, regardless of when you're charging, it's going to be cleaner than the alternative fuels. So cleaner than diesel, regardless of time.
This is Bill Boyce with SMUD. I'd add too on some of their I'll just say larger charging facilities. At least the ones we're supporting on larger light duty. We're also pairing some of that with energy storage to kind of support the electricity usage through the peak. So, as technologies increase in battery energy storage. You'll see flexibility with how we apply those types of technologies to support these larger types of installations that could drive peak loads. But the majority of that really does use. So, there's two messages really here. Is one, the grid's getting cleaner all the time. So all the electricity is headed towards renewable supply. But, in use of energy storage, to help ride through some of the peak times, those tools will be deployed, differently depending on the grid conditions for each one of these sites. But those are kind of arrows in the quiver that we can also use to help address, I think, that question.
Okay.
And just add one quick thing to that. This is Will Einstein. I just wanted to add to that it's really important that we all listen to our customers as well, because the deployment of these new trucks will be slowed if we're not allowing them to charge when they need to charge in order to proceed further on their route. And so it's going to be very important that as utilities As was mentioned earlier, we have a critical role to play in providing these high-level power requirements, and we will need to be, you know, at the table to help them as customers work through this, because fleet operators, you know, if they can't get fuel when they need to get fuel, they're not going to want to make this transition to a new technology.
Gotcha. Also, just following up on there was mention of energy storage, and I know that, you know, some EV charging station operators are using energy storage at their sites to abate demand charges and just give them more flexibility. Is that a consideration for these stations too?
That, I mean, those, when we talk about private sector investment at each one of the sites, how that will, you know, shake out, that will be one of the options I'm sure some of the private sector folks will look at. At SMUD, we've also developed a program where we can build the energy storage for the customer and let them take benefits of that. We had an announcement of some of those types of projects a few months ago with regards to Electrify America. But it's a way to support electric transportation with energy storage to address not only just the peak energy demands and some of the, we call it, you know, load utilization shapes with regards to demand charges and some of the other things that, you know, electric transportation is driven by those types of factors.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question, comment, comes.
Sorry. Before we go to the next call, this is Katie Sloan at Southern California Edison. Just want to clarify that for SCE, we'll be 80% clean energy by 2030 and carbon neutral by 2045. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from Jim Day from Energy Daily. Your line is open.
Hi, folks. Thanks for doing this. It's an interesting project. Can you help me sort of put this into context of the challenges that you're going to be facing in doing this, and maybe talk about whether you've had success or the level of success you've had in putting in fast chargers for passenger vehicles along this route, and what is being done to do that, and whether it sort of informs you on this effort for the larger vehicles?
Hey, this is Eva DeCestro from Pacific Power. I can take that one. So, again, this study was really representative of, I think, a lot of lessons learned from those light-duty deployments and looking, wanting to cooperate early together across states and service areas to take a look and maybe reduce some of those initial challenges that were in the light duty area. I think some of the more specific challenges are just, as the other folks on this call have already highlighted, the cost of this infrastructure will be higher due to the higher energy needs at these particular locations. And I think that's, again, magnified particularly in rural areas that might not already have the capacity to serve even the medium duty loads. But at least in Oregon, both Pacific Power and Portland General Electric had light duty public charging station programs approved at the same time. So we really tried to work together, at least in terms of prioritizing location, and tried to make a cohesive network within the state. I think you saw that same spirit deployed here in this study.
Thanks. Can you tell me, I mean, if I've got a passenger car and I want to drive from San Diego up to Seattle, is the I-5 corridor, I mean, are there fast chargers all along the route?
Yes, you could do that today. And I think there's lots of tools out there, public tools available, Chargeway, PlugShare, et cetera, that could help you do that. And I can't speak to every utility on this call, but I think many of us also have resources to support our customers as they are start going electric and driving electric vehicles.
Okay, thanks. Can I just ask one question along the same line? Can any of you from the utilities tell me, have you put in any proposals at your state regulators that would allow recovery and funding for this program, the medium and heavy duty charging along the corridor?
Sure. This is Katie Sloan from Southern California Edison. We already have a program that has been approved by our Public Utilities Commission, and I believe Pacific Gas and Electric and San Diego Gas and Electric have similar type ones that are for medium and heavy duty vehicles. Today, they've been focused on fleet chargers, so more charging at private locations. But we're looking at how we can expand those to public chargers that would be on freeways.
Thank you. Any of the others? Do you have programs?
Hi, this is
Brittany
from SDG&E. We have a similar program, as Katie mentioned, where we are focusing on medium-duty and heavy-duty police. We don't yet have anything pending at the CPUC for public, but we think that based on this study that these are the type of projects that we'll continue to look into.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question or comment comes from Linda Daly-Paulson from California Energy Markets. Your line is open.
Good morning. How are you? One thing that I don't see in the conversation is Southern California Ports as a partner in the study. Since the goods are being disseminated throughout the West Coast, typically originate there, why were they not included in the study? It would seem to be a key piece of the puzzle. And following up on that, how do you see this as dovetailing with efforts in the ports right now? Especially because they seem to be focusing on renewable natural gas as a zero-emission fuel for heavy-duty drayage rather than electrification.
So this is Katie at Southern California Edison, and then I'll start, and Nancy Sutley may want to jump in after me. So our main partner at the port is the Port of Long Beach. We did in the study look at the truck traffic along the corridors, so while the ports themselves weren't a partner in the study, we were looking at the traffic that are coming from the ports along the corridors, for example, the 710 corridor in the Los Angeles area onto the I-5. So the traffic associated with those ports and the vehicles coming out of them is inclusive of this study. As far as what's happening at the ports, for us, the Port of Long Beach is a strong partner. We've helped to electrify yard hostlers and rubber tire gantry cranes at the port already. Those projects have already been built and are operating. And through the program that I mentioned, Charge Ready Transport, we are partnering with the port more to electrify on-site at the port.
Yes, so this is Nancy Sutley with the LA Department of Water and Power, and similarly with the Port of Los Angeles. We have a strong working relationship with them in terms of the planning under their Clean Air Action Plan. We have regular meetings at the technical level to ensure that there's sufficient infrastructure to support their electrification needs in and around the port. And we also have a memorandum of understanding with the Port of Los Angeles regarding some financial assistance around installation of chargers and charging infrastructure.
So this is Emeka Anyang with Seattle City Light. I thought I'd just chime in here because out up here in Seattle, we are also partnering closely with the Port of Seattle on their Seattle Waterfront Clean Energy Strategic Plan, and that includes not just certainly drayage and shore power, but also Washington State Ferries, which is also part of the whole waterfront sort of ecosystem here in Seattle. And so while this is a utility-focused study, certainly our ties with the Port of Seattle out here and their port electrification plans run deep.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're at time, but I think we have one more question online. Do we still have Rob?
No, that was our last question, so I'll turn back over to
Paul.
That was
our last question. Okay, great. I just want to thank you, everybody, for joining in on the call. We really appreciate your participation. And like I said, if you do have follow-ups, you can go to westcoastcleantransit.com, and all the information, the report is there, the news release is there, the contact information for all the utilities who have participated in this are there. And so that concludes our news conference, and thank you very much for joining. So I just want to ask the utility partners to kind of hang out on the line after the media are dismissed. Thank you all for joining, and we'll ask you to have a great day, and talk to you soon.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.